This year is sponsored by Friends of First, B'nai Torah, the Spielmans, in memory of their grandmother, Rachel Bas Moshe.
Okay, we are making a little progress, moving along at our pace. We have Adoniyahu, who is Misnase Lemor, proclaiming himself to be the successor to the throne. And we discussed a little bit his strategies, his motives, what made him tick. And the we go on to say that he had the support of Yoav, who was the general, the secretary of defense, whatever you want to call it, and Evyasar HaKohen. Pasuk Ches. Pasuk Ches continues, V'tzadok HaKohen, Tzadok the Kohen, who was destined to become the next Kohen Gadol, Uvnayahu ben Yehoyada, who was a, you might say, the chief of staff. Certainly he was in Shlomo's kingdom. V'nasan ha-Navi, Nasan the Navi, Nasan was the Navi who originally prophesied that Shlomo would be the next king. So Nasan ha-Navi, V'shimi v'rei ha-Giborim asher le-David, and Shimi and Rei, the Giborim of David. Usually when the Pasuk refers to Giborim, we're not really talking about necessarily physical strength, but you know, our Hasaga of what a Gibor is a little different. I always thought it was extremely ironic how in Israel today they've developed the Maccabee games, the Maccabean games, to imitate the Olympics, when the Maccabeans were fighting against the Olympics, against the Greeks. But that's not our idea of a Gibor, and we'll discuss in a few moments who these people were. Lahayim Adonio. So Shimi and Rei are a little bit mysterious. The others mentioned in the Pasuk are clearly known throughout the Pesukim, and their names will come up again. We'll get to know them a little better. But Shimi and Rei are not clear who they are. This appears to be the first reference to them, and they were not following Adonyahu. According to the Abarbanel, Shimi is Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera was an interesting individual. He was one of the greatest of the Talmidei Chachamim of that generation. And in fact, he was Shlomo HaMelech's Rebbe. He was Shlomo HaMelech's personal Rebbe. But he was also an enemy of David. And when David was chased out of Yerushalayim and had to run away from Absalom, Shimi ben Gera cursed him, what was described as a klala nimretzes. Apparently, Shimi ben Gera felt that David had no right to the throne, that had stolen it, so to speak, from the household of Shaul. Shimi ben Gera was actually related to the household of Shaul, and he opposed David HaMelech. So why was he one of those who did not follow Adoniyahu? So there are two suggestions mentioned. One is that perhaps he was trying to compensate for what he had done. He knew he had cursed David, and he knew that he was in trouble. When David returned to Yerushalayim, he went out to meet him and pleaded for his life, and David promised that he would not take any action against him during David's lifetime. But now that David is approaching his end, certainly Shimi ben Gera realized that it might not bode well for him, and perhaps because of that he was being especially loyal to David and to Shlomo in the hopes that would stand him in good stead. If that is the case, it's interesting because that's the opposite reaction that we described from Yoav and Evyasar, who also felt that that the reign of Shlomo, the end of David's life, might bring them problems, and because of that they supported Adoniyahu. Shimi seems to react, according to this explanation, in a different manner, which kind of demonstrates the principle that, there is sometimes an attitude that people develop that, circumstances compel us. Our situation makes life difficult. It forces us one way or another. And here you have, in a sense, the same challenge presented to two people, and they react in opposite ways. So clearly, it's our own choices that determine how we deal with the situations that are presented to us. The second explanation reflects on his other relationship. Although he may have had certain bad will and negativity to David, but he was Shlomo's Rebbe. And a Rebbe has a certain relation with his Talmud. Right? So in a way, a Rebbe is like a father and the Talmud is like a child. So it would be very reasonable that Shimi would feel a close association with Shlomo and want Shlomo to be the king rather than wanting Adoniyahu to be the king. Who is Rei? So again, the Barbanel identifies him. Now let's see if you can figure out this connection. He suggests that Rei was Hushai Ha'arki. You could see the connection, right? Who is Hushai Ha'arki? Hushai Ha'arki is the one person in Tanakh that is described as a Rea, friend of David. So Rei means my friend. David's friend was Hushai Ha'arki. We don't know too much about Hushai Ha'arki. There's one fascinating incident in Sefer Shmuel about Hushai Ha'arki, and that is, again, during the rebellion of Avshalom. So David HaMelech had to escape, and he was in the Midbar Yehuda, in the desert of Yehuda, running for his life. And Hushai Ha'arki heard what was going on and met up with him and came to accompany him in the desert. David said to Hushai, "You don't really do me too much good here in the desert. One person more, one person less is not going to help. Go to Yerushalayim and see if you could infiltrate the administration of Avshalom, and maybe you could help me there." So he was sent as, you might say, a spy, a mole. So he went to Yerushalayim and presented himself to Avshalom. Avshalom was rightfully suspicious of Hushai Ha'arki. "What are you doing here? You're my father's best friend." So, to which he gave a very lame answer. His answer was, "You're my best friend's son. Why wouldn't I support you?" Somehow he was accepted into the administration of David HaMelech, of Avshalom, right. Now Avshalom had to make a key strategic decision. He had David HaMelech on the run. He was in control of the apparatus of government. What should he do? Should he consolidate his power and strengthen his hold on the kingdom and then later attend to David HaMelech? Or should he pursue David HaMelech first, with the intent of killing him, of course, and then later consolidate his power? The chief advisor to the entire revolution, who was advising Avshalom every step of the way, was Achitophel. The Pasuk says about Achitophel something that is beyond belief. If the Pasuk wouldn't say it, nobody would dare be able to say such a thing. The Pasuk says, consulting with Achitophel was the equivalent of consulting with God. Kedivrei Elokim. He was never wrong. His strategies were perfect. And everything he advised Avshalom to do was working. So what did Achitophel say? "Get David when he's on the run. David is a very powerful adversary, very dangerous person, very popular. If time passes, he may be able to attract more followers, and he'll be able to be rested, he'll be able to regroup, and he'll be very, very difficult to foe. But if you get him now while you have him on the ropes and finish him off, you can worry about everything else later." Hushai Ha'arki understood that Achitophel was right again. So he began to give an opposing viewpoint. And he started saying, "No, let's gather together a huge army. This way, you know, we'll have a numerical superiority. You never know. You know, we'll fight David now. He's a tough guy. He may defeat us." And he starts going on. The psukim are very unusual. He says, "We will get so many soldiers who will cover the face of the earth. We'll, if he hides in a mountain, we'll tie ropes around the mountain and pull down the mountain. If he goes to a city, we'll knock down the walls." It is the old adage. You know, they say, the lawyers say that if the facts are on your side, you pound on the facts. If the law is on your side, you pound on the law. If neither is on your side, you pound on the table. The Metzudas David says that that's what Hushai Ha'arki was doing. He was getting so dramatic and melodramatic and fancy because he knew he didn't have much of an argument. But if you get carried away, sometimes you win people over, at least temporarily. So that's what he did. And for reasons unknown, or actually known, Avshalom listened to Hushai Arki. When Achitophel saw that, he says he went home and hung himself and killed himself. Why? Because he said, it's it, the revolution is over. When David HaMelech regains power, he will have me executed as a Morid V'Malchus, as a rebel. And a Morid V'Malchus' property goes to the state. This way, if I kill myself, my property will go to my children. And he is the prototypical example of a Ma'avid Atzma L'Das, a person who deliberately commits suicide, who is Ein Lo Chelek V'Olam Haba. That's what Achitofel did. So, and of course, that's what happened. David regrouped, got followers back, and eventually defeated Avshalom in battle. The Mitzvah David is perplexed by the question that I've been kind of setting you up for, which is, why in the world did Avshalom listen to him? Why did he take him into the administration in the first place, and why did he listen to him? He says, it doesn't make sense. He shouldn't have accepted that lame excuse to join the administration. And if he did, he obviously was treating him with suspicion. Achitophel is his right-hand man. Everything Achitophel said worked. And all of a sudden, he listens to Hushai Arki. And what he says is, it was a nace. Kadosh Baruch Hu was controlling history, and he put it into Avshalom's head to let Hushai Arki in and to listen to him. Which struck me as very interesting, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was intervening and making a nes, why couldn't he just have made a nes that Achitophel should give the wrong advice? You don't need Hushai Arki, you don't need all this stuff. Put this foolish thought into Achitophel's head to tell Avshalom that we should wait. I assume the answer is that would have been a bigger nes. Achitophel was such a genius. For him to come up with such a stupid etzah was so contrary to Teva, was so against nature, that would have been a bigger nes. Because Baruch Hu's hanhaga generally is to minimize the obviousness of his intervention, which gives you a little bit even better idea of who Achitophel was, how smart he was. Being smart doesn't necessarily mean that you're right. Right? People can be geniuses but can choose evil. And that's really what Achitophel was all about. But getting back to Malachim, that was Shmuel. So according to the Abarbanel, Rei was Hushai Arki, and he was loyal to David and to Shlomo. Pasuk goes on, Vayizbach Adoniyahu. One more point I want to make on this pasuk. The Kli Yochar points out that the pasuk says, doesn't say Haya im Shlomo, but Lo Haya im Adoniyahu. And he says this is to be merames, to hint that their motives were not for themselves. And as like we said before, that Yoav and Avyasar was Vayazach Adoniyahu, because at least subconsciously they thought that they would end up better on the deal. So this is not the motives of these people. They weren't joining Shlomo, figuring if Shlomo wins and becomes king, then we'll be in good shape. Then the pasuk would have said Hayuim Shlomo, because their motive was they wanted to get in on the good side of Shlomo. But it's not so. It's Lo Hayuim Adoniyahu. They did not want to support Adoniyahu because they knew that Adoniyahu was wrong. So their motives were L'shem Shemayim, and that is hinted to in that phrase in the pasuk. The pasuk goes on, Vayizbach Adoniyahu Tzonu Bakar Mari. Adoniyahu sacrificed sheep and cattle, fatted cattle, im Eben HaZocheles, by the stone Eben HaZocheles. A little bit unusual expression. Rashi says it was a large stone that people used to use as kind of a contest to see if they could move the stone. But it was apparently a well-known location, Asher Eitzel Ein Rogel, which is near the fountain of Rogel. Vayikra es kol echa b'nei ha-melech, and he called all his brothers, the sons of the king, v'chol anshe Yehuda avdei ha-melech, all the people of Yehuda avdei ha-melech. Again, if you took these words literally, it means he invited the entire Shevet Yehuda. That would be a mighty big party. Therefore, a number of the Mefarshim learned that it doesn't really mean all the people of Yehuda, but kol anshe Yehuda is modified by the expression avdei ha-melech. It means all the officers, all the important people who worked for the king, the king's administration. So he invited all the family of the king, all the sons, and the administrators, the apparatus of government, to this gathering. However, certain people were not invited. This is a very key step. This es nasan hanavi, nasan the navi, b'nayahu, ves hagiborim, ves shlomo achiv lo kara. He did not invite Shlomo, he did not invite Nasan Navi, he did not invite b'nayahu and the giborim. Why not? Clearly this indicates several things. Number one, it means that Adoniyahu knew very well that there was a promise that Shlomo should be king. If he invited all the sons of the king and not Shlomo, it's because Shlomo was his competition. So any excuse that Adoniyahu might make, saying he didn't realize that David wanted Shlomo to be king, or that there was a nevuah, was basically slugged up, if you will, was destroyed by his invitation policy. Then why didn't you invite Shlomo? If you thought you were legitimate and you invited all the other sons, how come you left out Shlomo? How come you left out Nasan and Navi? Clearly the motive, and all the Mefarshim really say this, clearly the motive of Adoniyahu was to establish himself as king, and he knew that if these guys were to show up, they could make trouble for him. So he didn't invite them. The question is raised, how come Shimi and Rei are not mentioned in this pasuk? And Tzadok HaKohen, right? In the first pasuk, in pasuk Ches, it lists the names of the people who were not joining Adoniyahu. So it mentions Tzadok, Benyo, Nasan, Shimi, Rei, and the Giborim. Here we have Nasan HaNavi, B'nayel, and the Giborim, and obviously Shlomo, but we don't have Tzadok, Shimi, and Rei. What? Yeah, that's true. I don't have an explanation for that, but why are they left out? So one explanation, the Kli Yakar is the one who raises this question and has two explanations. One explanation is that there were really different levels. There were those people who were invited and came to the party. There were those people who were not invited at all. There were also a couple of people who were invited but didn't come. So he says, Tzadok, Shimi and Rei were invited to the party, but they didn't come. So these were people that Adoniyahu was not convinced were against him. Nasan HaNavi, who gave the nevuah, Shlomo himself, obviously, and Benyo Ben Yadon, who was the right-hand man of Shlomo, was a confidant of his. So he knew from the start that they wouldn't help him. If anything, they would be trouble. But Shimi, Rei, and Tzadok, he wasn't so sure about. They were not quite on the same level. And therefore, he gave them an invitation to see if they show or not. But Maisa, they didn't come because they didn't want to support Adoniyahu. Another explanation he suggests is that he didn't invite any of these people. But for the others, he had excuses. In other words, the point of the pasuk mentioning that he didn't invite these people is to demonstrate Adoniyahu's guilt. And in fact, this is the evidence that's going to present to David. If you would try to defend Adoniyahu by saying, listen, he's just making an innocent party and maybe things got a little out of hand, but he didn't really mean to say he was king and he didn't know about Shlomo, he wasn't trying to usurp Shlomo, then why didn't he invite Shlomo? Why didn't he invite Nasan? Why didn't he invite Benayahu? But for the other three, he had an excuse. So by Tzadok, his excuse was he invited Eviyasar. So Eviyasar was a Kohen Gadol. People knew that Tzadok was a potential competitor, so it's not so nice, you know, you invite Eviyasar to invite Tzadok, so what do you want him to do? He couldn't, you know, protocol dictates Eviyasar is still officially the Kohen Gadol, he has to invite Eviyasar, and once he did that, it's not so nice to invite Tzadok, it'll make Eviyasar uncomfortable. He said, Shimi, he quotes a Chazal, that the reason why David spared Shimi's life in the first place, Shimi ben Gera, is because he was a fountain of Torah. He never stopped learning and teaching Torah basically 24/7, I guess a little sleep, whatever else he had to do. So a guy like that, you don't interrupt him to invite him to, you know, he's the type of guy that doesn't come to chasness, you know, so you don't interrupt him. So what do you want? I shouldn't interrupt Shimi ben Gera? I mean, who would do a thing like that? And Rei, according to calculation, was a very old man. because if he was Chushai Arki, he was older than David, and David himself is already old. So he didn't want to disturb him. It's too hard for him to go to Simchas, you know. So for Chushai Arki, he has an excuse. For Shimi ben Gera, he has an excuse. For Tzadok HaKohen, he has an excuse. But there's no excuse for Shlomo, for Nasan HaNavi, or for Bnei ben Yoyada. So the pasuk mentions these three because these are the three that demonstrate Adoniyahu's guilt. So along comes Nasan HaNavi, pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Nasan al Basheva Aim Shlomo. Nasan speaks to Basheva, the mother of Shlomo, Lamar, saying, "Hello, Shamat ki Moach Adoniyahu ben Chagis. Have you not heard that Adoniyahu ben Chagis has made himself a king? Vadonenu David lo yada, and our master David doesn't know anything about it." So Nasan HaNavi is about to initiate the advice, and we'll get into the details of it in a little while or next week. It gives advice to Nasan to intercede. Nasan gives advice to Bathsheba to intercede, to try to do something to prevent Adoniyahu's plot from being successful.
What does it say that he didn't like David HaMelech?
Well, I guess David HaMelech is obviously that he didn't invite. He was home. He was, you know, not capable of going. But it's pretty clear why he wouldn't invite David HaMelech. But there, I guess there's no real kasha. He didn't invite David HaMelech. You know, this is similar to you don't disturb the king for these types of functions. Since he would have an excuse for not inviting David HaMelech. So there's a fundamental problem here, and the Rishonim addressed this in several different ways. What was disturbing Nasan HaNavi? Why did he act? So they say, what do you mean? You know, he was worried that Adoniyahu would be king, Shlomo, you know. But now we get into the realm of Bitachon and Hishtadlus. Didn't Nasan HaNavi himself know for a fact that someone was going to be king? He was the Navi. He had a nevuah from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So what are you worried about? Why do you find it necessary to do anything? A Kaddish Baruch Hu runs the world, let him take care of it. Now, in general, we know that there is a concept called hishtadlus, which means that you have to take an effort. Right? We don't sit back and say, listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. If he wants to give me a parnasa, he'll give me a parnasa. So I'll sit home and wait for the money to come in. Some people do that. The Gemara testifies that some people did that and it worked. So Rav Shimon ben Yochai said, Zolcha, Melachto Nasa De'Acherim. If you're Zolcha, your work is done for you by others. But the Gemara's Meir, it says, Harbe Asu Kirab Shimon Ben Yochai Velo Asa Biyadam. Many people tried to do like Rav Shimon Ben Yochai and it didn't work. Harbe Asu Kirab Yishmael Velo Asa Biyadam. Many did like Rabbi Yishmael and make an effort and set aside time for learning and it did work. Why did it work for Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai and not the others? Because you have to really, really mean it. You have to be on that madrega of bitachon. And there's a story told of the involving the Alshech. By Moshe Alshech, he wrote his most famous work is a parish on the Torah called Drashas Alshech, that is available today. And he was, amongst other things, he was Taka Magid, a famous darshan in his day. This is going back to the 1500s and maybe the 1600s, pretty early Afra. And he once went to a town and gave a drasha on bitachon, which he said if a person has real bitachon, he doesn't have to do any hishtadlus, he doesn't have to work. In the audience, there was a wagon driver, the equivalent of a taxi driver, comes home to his wife and says, you know, I've been a fool. I drive the wagon in all kinds of weather. I don't make a lot of money. Right? We manage to put food on the table. I'm not complaining. We're doing okay, but rich we're not. So all of my zeh I don't have. And I don't have any time to learn. I don't have time to do anything. All of my boy I don't have. The Alshech said that if you have bitachon, Kadosh Baruch Hu will take care of you. So what do I need to do this work for? Let me learn and have bitachon, and Hashem will take care of me. So his wife figures, you know what? He's a little bit inspired. You know, he just heard the speech. Let him do it a few days, he'll get over it. No problem. So he goes to the Beis Medrash to learn, and he really didn't even know that much how to learn, but he found somebody to help him, and he's sitting here learning. A few days goes by, he's still doing it. So she says, you know, I think it's time to go back to work. He says, didn't I explain it to you? The Asher says, you're happy, Tachon, you don't need to work. So I have no Olam Hazeh, no Olam Haba. What a fool I am. I'm gonna learn. He says, but like, how are we going to feed the family? He says, Hashem will take care of it. She's not getting any place. Says, what could she do? She starts withdrawing her savings. You know, went to the local ATM, you know, to the bank. I just had this Shabbos. I had my three-year-old grandson over, and I was telling him, you know, the story of Hillel. He went up to the roof to learn Torah. He couldn't get into the Beis Medrash because he didn't have a coin. So I got to the dramatic moment. He had no money. They wouldn't let him. What's he supposed to do? So he says, go to the bank. I said, but he didn't have a bank account. He says, go to the money machine. But all right. So she goes to the bank, goes to the money machine, you know, withdraws her savings. A few weeks go by, nothing's left. Listen, now this is getting serious already. We have no savings left. You've frittered everything away. You know, you got to get back to work. He refuses. So she begins selling their household, possessions. But she decides she's not selling the horse and wagon because when he comes back to his senses, he needs to make a parnasa. Basically, she sold everything they could sell. And he's sitting there, you know, no problems. Finally, there's nothing left. Except the horse and wagon. So she gives him a real hard time. He refuses. He said, listen, I know what the Ashrach said, and it's fine, and don't worry about it. If you're worried, you want to sell the horse and wagon, sell the horse and wagon. If you don't want it, you don't have to. Hashem will help us. Don't worry about it. So she sold the horse and wagon. She had no choice. After a while, that money also ran out. And now she's really desperate. She said, this is crazy. Now we have to sell the house. We'll be out in the street. There's no welfare. You know, there's no, city subsidized housing. What are we going to do? Just then she hears a commotion, a noise outside the house, and she sees the horse and wagon. Nobody's there. In the back of the horse on the wagon there's a couple of bags full of treasure, gold and silver, all kinds of stuff. They did an investigation and discovered that the person that they sold the horse and wagon to had discovered a buried treasure and bought the horse and wagon because he wanted to transport it. And he went back, loaded up the wagon, and promptly had a heart attack and died. The horse got spooked, didn't know what to do, and the teva of animals, they go back to where they're familiar. So he came back to the house. And they ended up with enough money for the rest of their lives. Well, the story, you can imagine, made the rounds, and got back to the Alshech and his Talmidim. So the Talmidim of the Alshech came over to the Alshech and I don't understand. Here you have this wagon driver, simple person, and he hears one drasha from you and he decides to have bitachon and all these miracles happen. See, no such miracles ever happened to you. No such miracles ever happened to us. How do you explain that? So Alshech said, you see, the difference between us and him is that we're too smart, too learned. So it's true, we know there's such a concept, you have bitachon, and Hashem will help you, but we also know that's Hashem ben Yochai, but har be'asuk Hashem ha'asuk bi'adam. So we always have questions, are we really in the madrega to do this? Do we have enough bitachon? For us to have absolute bitachon is extremely difficult, maybe impossible. But a person doesn't know any better, he just heard this one drasha, you have bitachon, never occurred to him that there's any place for doubt. So his bitachon was so pure and so absolute that taka a miracle happened to him. But for us to achieve that, so I blew it for you, Rabbos. I mean, we just explained the two shittas. Sorry. But, good. So the Asuch couldn't quite do it. The reason why this presents a problem is it is surely a simple concept to say that there's such a thing as yishtadlus and bitachon. You have bitachon, you have to take your effort. But when we're dealing with people of the stature of Nasan Hanavi, when you're dealing with people of the stature of Basheva, Shlomo HaMelech, one would think that maybe they were a little bit better than the Asher. And despite the fact that they knew this whole idea, they should be able to have that bitachon. And therefore, Why was it necessary to go through these efforts to secure the melucha? And this is the issue that's being addressed by the Rishonim. They could do, why weren't they able to do what Rosh Hashanah Ben Yochai did? So one explanation, the Radak and others, indicate that there is a concept of Hishtabas, and the reason for that is because we're not dealing with a purely personal issue. If you're worried about your own parnasa, your own income, that's one thing. A person has the right to have bitachon, and if you really are truly sincere in your bitachon, maybe you will be able to pull off a Hashem Ben Yochai or the wagon driver. But when you're dealing with something that affects Kal Yisrael, this is not a personal issue. This has become a community issue. It becomes Tzarchei Tzibur. It becomes a Ruchnius issue. You can't have bitachon when it comes to that. You have to do Ishtalos. To fulfill a mitzvah, you have to make every effort. And therefore, even though Nosson HaNavi had full bitachon, that with or without his help, and with or without Bathsheba's help, Shlomo would be the king, but it's your obligation in terms of Hilchos Ishtalos, when it comes to trying to do a mitzvah, trying to help the tzibur, to take every effort as if it depended on you. And you have to exert yourself to the fullest. And therefore, he took action. This, by the way, leads to a certain nisayon that you have to be very careful about. Because, especially when people get l'shem shemayim. They say over semi in jest that the Gemara tells us that Penina was l'shem shemayim. Penina was the co-wife of Chana. Chana and Penina were the wives of Elkanah, and Penina had a number of children, and Chana didn't. And Penina used to make fun of Chana, used to get her upset in order to get her to daven. So even though Penina was punished for this, but the Gemara says she was Mecham L'Shem Shemayim. So the cynics say, how did the Gemara know she was Mecham L'Shem Shemayim? So they answer, Azaymin Rishus could only be L'Shem Shemayim. By the way, that's not the true pshat. It's pretty much implicit in the psukim, exactly what her kavada was. But the concept happens to be true. Sometimes when a person does something L'Shem Shemayim, they could be the worst Rishonim because they believe that the cause is that they're trying to save the world. So you have to be very careful when you get into the mode, oh, listen, this is not a personal issue. This is for Kal Yisrael. This is to save the world. So you could go overboard with the Ishtalos, and you have to keep it within the bounds of the Torah. And then we mentioned last week the incident, of course, of Esther. When Esther came to the king, did not reveal her family in order that she should be sent out. The Gemara Lemaisa says that Mordechai knew that Esther was going to be selected as queen because she was roy to have a nace that she shouldn't be caught. And if she was caught, Hashem must have plans for her. Yet, he still gave her advice how to get out of it. Because that's a Kodesh Baruch Hu's business in running the world. We had mentioned this. You have to do what's right. So, it's important to keep that Ishtablis balance. Nevertheless, according to the Radak and other Rishonim, when it comes to Mili de Tzibura, you have to do the Ishtablis, you can't rely on Bitochem. The Barbanel presents a different chat. The Barbanel says that the reason why Nassan acted and thought that Ishtablis was necessary is because you always have the issue of Shema Garam Hachet. Even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Shlomo to be the king, maybe something happened in between that he didn't deserve it, that they lost it. And therefore he felt that you couldn't rely on it. As we see that Yaakov Avinu was promised that he would be safe from all danger, and yet when he was facing Esav, he was afraid and he was mispalel. Katonti mikol ha-chasadim, maybe Shema Gar Machet. This pshat faces two major difficulties. One is that we have a rule that when it comes to Nevuah, if a prophecy for good was given, it's never retracted. In fact, if that were not true, there would be no way of telling who was a Navi Emes. Because any Navi could predict something. If it didn't happen, he could say, Shema Gar Machet. if a Navi predicts something bad to happen, itaka isn't any proof if it doesn't happen. Maybe they did tshuva and the Kadosh Baruch was mochel. A nevuah lera does not necessarily have to take place. Yonah prophesied that Nineveh would be destroyed and it wasn't destroyed. But a nevuah letova has to take place. So what do you mean, Shema Gomachai? I thought that perhaps one could answer this by saying that this isn't necessarily a nevuah letova. Saying that Shlomo is going to be king may be a tova for Shlomo, but it affects all of Klal Yisrael. Who says it's a good thing for Klal Yisrael? Especially if Shlomo is not a worthy king, so it could be a bad thing. So maybe something like this can't be considered a nevuah letova. If it's good for one person, not necessarily good for others, maybe it's not a nevuah letova. I'm not sure. But the second question that bothers me more is, I don't get it. Miman of Shach. If you're not going with the Mahalach of Ishtablus, you're allowed to have Bitachon. But the reason why you're not having Bitachon is because Shema Gor Machet. Well, if it's Gor Machet, what's the use of Ishtablus? If God's in control, make up your mind. If you have Bitachon, so let Hashem do it. Yeah, maybe Hashem doesn't want it. Oh, good, so let Hashem do that. Your Ishtablus isn't going to make a difference. So how could it be that because of Shema Gor Machet, therefore, Nosson felt that he had to take action? And I would like to suggest that perhaps the answer is that there are two levels of Gor Machet. You could have Gor Machet that means you lost it. Shema Gor Machet, and now Shlomo is not going to be king anymore. If that's true, there's talking nothing you could do. But sometimes you could have Gor Machet means it's not going to come easy. And because of your chet, you have to do Hishtablus. Because of your chet, you have to work for it. You have to struggle. For example, Chazal say that it was destined, it was Ru'uyim Hayu Yisrael, that there be a Shania, the second time they entered Eretz Yisrael should have been as miraculous as the first time. When they entered Eretz Yisrael the first time, they split the Yarden, walls fell down, all kinds of miraculous battlefield victories with no casualties. When they came into Eretz Yisrael the second time, it was very mundane. They got permission from the king, they started building base, they had to stop again, they had problems, they came, they went. Nothing miraculous about it. Says the Gemara, really, it was Roy that the Birishni could be like the Birishana, Ella Shagar Machet. But that the Chet caused them not to take place. But they still entered Eretz Yisrael. So what did the Chet cause? The Chet caused that their entry into Eretz Yisrael wouldn't be as spectacular and as wonderful as it could have been, but it still took place. You know, the Mefarshim on the Tefillah say that we say in the Birchas Kriyashma, V'adienu l'sholom me'arba kanfas ha'aretz, v'sholachenu komimiyus l'artzenu. So what does it mean? V'adienu l'sholom, in peace, from the arba kanfas ha'aretz, v'sholachenu komimiyus, standing upright. Mefarshim say that we have conflicting nevuos as to how Kaiso is going to return to Eretz Yisrael. You have the terrifying prophecies of Gog and Magog, Chevlei HaMashiach, all kinds of terrible things, and we're going to straggle in the survivors, the remnants, one from a family, ten from a city, which maybe was referring to Nebuchadnezzar, what we suffered in the Holocaust. Or it could come in B'shalom, Kamimiyus. So we're being mispalel that it should happen in the better way, not in the worse way. But it's going to happen. We're going to return to Eretz Yisrael. So I would suggest that perhaps what the Abarbanel means is that Nosson HaNavi was afraid that Shema Gor Machet, and therefore it's not going to be so easy. If they just sit back, there are going to be struggles, there's going to be fights. We have to do something. We can't just wait for it to come into our lap. If not for the fear of Shema Gor Machet, since there was a nevuah, since there was a prophecy, maybe it's not necessary to do Ishtablus, even for Tzarchei Tzibur. Even though normally we say you do, but this was a nevuah, this was a direct prophecy. Perhaps we don't, but you never know. Shema Gor Machet, and therefore we won't get the melucha unless we struggle for it or work for it. So therefore, he felt necessary to take action. There is a third pshat, and this is in Rashi a few psukim later, when the pasuk says, I'm going to give you an eitza, umalti es nafsheich, and you'll save your life. Rashi says, umalti es nafsheich min ha-machlokes, from fighting. And it seems like Rashi may be addressing this question, I believe, and he has a third shot. that if not for the hishtadlus of Nasan HaNavi, Nasan had full bitachon, there's no question that Shlomo would be king. But that kingdom, who the prophecy never said how you're going to get the kingdom, you might have a machlokas, you might have Adoniyahu being in another camp and saying he should be king, and who knows how long that machlokas would last. And machlokas itself is not a pleasant thing, not something that you want. So therefore you need to take action, not to secure the melucha, not to save your life as the pashup shah in the pasuk would be, but rather to prevent machlokas. So this could be the reason why Nasan HaNavi acted. There's another interesting question, and this is raised by the Ralbag, and that question is, I don't know if we have time to really do it justice, but that question is, why was it Nasan of all people who acted? One would think that Bathsheba had much more at stake than Nasan did. Shlomo himself had much more at stake. Why did it take Nasan to tell Bathsheba to go and do something? We would have expected Bathsheba to go running to Nasan and say, what could we do? And the Rabbah says that Nasan HaNavi acted because he was the one who delivered the prophecy in the first place, and therefore he felt compelled to act. And very briefly, I would just like to explain that, because Nasan HaNavi wasn't worried about his reputation, because he knew the prophecy was accurate. So he knew, you know, that he was a Navi Emes, and I don't think it was for personal motives. But rather, I think the concept is, he felt a certain achrayus. It's sort of like we say, hamatzil b'mitzvah omim lo gemar. If you started something, we tell you to finish it. You know, somebody starts a new Torah institution or a chesed institution or some kind of a mitzvah, usually they're the most active person, even after other people jump on board. But the guy who got it started, you know, they really are most nefesh yom v'layla. You just look around at any mostos, community institutions, chesed, Torah institutions, and you'll see that typically is the case. You know, I'm sure you know such people who are just muster yom v'layla for a particular cause. They're the ones who started it. There are other people involved too. Not the same as the one who started it. So starting something gives you a great impetus. I feel like it's my baby, so to speak. I've got to make sure that it's, you know, I feel more muster to it, more given over to it. But I just thought it's an interesting insight that apparently it's possible, at least when you're dealing with great people who don't care so much about their personal motivations, that motivation is a stronger motivation than self-preservation. The Bathsheba, whose son could be king or not be king, who she herself, according to the Rabbag, subscribes to the view of the Radak, that she could have been killed if Adoniyahu became the king. Her son could have been killed. So apparently all those fears didn't motivate Bathsheba to act on her own, because, listen, she had to be tough and don't worry, things will be okay. But Nasan HaNavi, who had that added drive, even though he personally was not as great a risk as Shlomo and Bathsheba, and didn't have as much at stake, but the motivation, but it's my mitzvah, I've got to finish it, was stronger than the motivations of self-preservation that Bathsheba had.